Naturally desire to remain in the vast existence of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, someone very great by material calculations, Mahatvam, someone with Mahatvam, greatness, fails to take shelter of the Supreme Lord, but instead becomes attached to material household life. His greatness is like that of a young, low-class couple. One who's too attached to material life loses all the spiritual qualities. Remember, when we talk about household life, we talk about a life of material enjoyment. Nowadays, household life sounds to us pretty straight up. I mean, for us, the life of material enjoyment is not getting married, but just playing in the field and messing around. And but that wasn't even an option so much. And then he concludes, therefore, he says, tasmat. And Prabhupada, this is in Prabhupada's translation, but it's not in the Sanskrit. Oh, demons. It doesn't really say there are demons with them in Varsha. Although there may have been some of his associates, which are, they're all demons by birth, so even though they may be devotees, they may be with them, but anyway, he says, give up the so-called happiness of family life, freedom, and simply take shelter of the lotus feet of the Sringadev, Shingapada, to the actual shelter of fearlessness, Akutabhayam. This word shows up a number of times. Akutabhayam. Entanglement in family life, material life, is the root cause of material attachment, the fearful desires, remorseless anger, despair, fear, the desire for false prestige, all of which results in the confusion of birth and death. So from these prayers, we see a real understanding of devotional service, of surrender to the Lord, and purification, and so on. Just as the other, so far the other ones, have focused more on how we become entangled with what's it like in the world. This one here is also stressing what we have to do to become free. They all do that, but this is the great stress here. This one's especially noticeable by some of the prayers here. When we turn to the next parsha, now we're on the western side of Ilavritta. This is called Ketumala Varsha. It is very interesting, Ketumala Varsha. There, the Lord is worshipped Kamadeva Swarupa in the form of Kamadeva. It often says Cupid or Pradyumna. By Lakshmi. So Lakshmi Devi, it's also called Rama, is worshipping him. And here for the first time we see some associates particularly mentioned. That is to say, the Prajapati, whose name is Samvatsara. You know what Samvatsara means? Anybody familiar with that term?
Huh?
A year, yes. Actually, the more technical meaning of Samvatsara, especially in this canto, is the orbital period of a planet. Because Bhagavatam says later on that the moon has its own Samvatsara, and the different planets each have their own Samvatsara. That's the orbital period. So usually we take it as the Samvatsara of the sun. That means a solar year. So here it's mentioned a Prajapati whose name is Samvatsara, who is in Ketumala Varsha, who is participating in this worship of Kamadeva, along with his sons and daughters. The daughters are Rachu, that is to say, night. And the sons are the day. Aha. The sons and daughters are Aha, Ratra. So therefore, he has 36,000 offspring, one for each day and each night in the lifetime of a human being. So they're taking 360 as the number of days in a year, and as 100 years. And so there's that many days and that many nights.
And 36,000 daughters
or 36,000 sons? No, I think, that's what it would have to be, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It says here that the Javadi's offspring number 36,000, one for each day and each night. But it has to be actually twice that number. Huh? Yeah, so he means 36,000 of each. And then he has this very weird, strange. At the end of each year, at the end of each Samvatsara, the Prajapati's daughters become very agitated or disturbed, upon seeing the extremely effulgent disc of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus they all suffer miscarriages. Now, it's mentioned that in the Bila Sparga, there's no sense of the passage of time. Because all the planets and the sun are invisible. But time appears on various occasions. The Sudarshana chakra comes through there, like a hurricane. And also it's mentioned there that the wives and daughters of all the demons have miscarriages. So this is a very strange thing. Something you need to check out is this. Because the Sudarshana chakra is also sometimes considered the wheel of time. Now, among its many different features, it's time. It's this chakra, the Kala chakra. It's identified as Sudarshana chakra. And so here at the end of each year, their time is used up. And then they see this Mahastra, effulgent, and so they become so disturbed by seeing this. In many cultures, the end of the year is always a dangerous time. It's considered a very dangerous time. That's why there's so many holidays everywhere at the end of the year, you know. I mean, the Christians stuck there is just because there are Roman holidays at that time. And people do these special celebrations to kind of guard themselves about the dangerous period from the end of the year. Because it was almost as though it were kind of a devastation was going to take place before the new year. The old year would die, you know, and it was like a scary thing. And then the new year would begin. So I'm reminded of that in this case. But anyway, there's another research topic, is the Sudarshana Chakra, that seems to be going around every so often. I should find the passage, just a second.
Yeah,
why did
you speak
in
the
60s? Yeah, you know, they're different calendar systems. And one thing is to have 360 days a year, and then every so often you add extra time. There's just various ways of dealing with it. Because the other thing is, usually people would measure years by different orbits. Like we use typically the lunar calendar. We follow the orbit of the moon. All our feast days and everything are all based on the lunar calendar. And as a result, every 5 years or so, like this year, we stick in an extra month to kind of bring them together again. You know, in South America, the pre-Columbian Maya, they had a calendar based on the orbit of Venus. So there's just all kinds of different calendars. We, of course, mostly do Venus and the Sun.
So when you say descending into the Earth, actually, it's time of the Earth orbit?
Well, from our point of view, it's the Sun going around the Earth, isn't it? So we have, you know, it's the orbital period as we judge it is 364 and a fourth days. And that's why we make it an even day by having a leap year to even things up. So I think in this case they used to, because they wanted a round number, not 365, so they had 360, and then every so often they added some extra time to
how often they would have to.
You know, there's a whole thing, you can study it if you want to read it in the astronomical books.
This year. How many days was it extra this year?
Well, this is the lunar calendar is an added this Purusha Tama, so like an extra like 20 days or something to bring the lunar calendar more in sync with the solar calendar.
Do you have any lunar days around
the
year by the calendar?
No. Okay. This is something I have left to the experts. Because this is not an iron. Here it says, in these verses, they live for 1,000 years. But there's a convention, and you should understand that everyone lives for 100 years. But 100 of their years looks like 1,000 of ours, and so on. And the demigods living 10,000 years, to them it's 100 years. And how long is Brahma's lifetime? It's 100 years. Mm-hmm. But they're made of days of Brahma, minutes of Brahma, seconds of Brahma. So everyone lives 100 years in that sense. Right? So that's why, that's the convention.
Well, they still have 360 days in their years, which I just mean is not based on the earth, the sun's orbit around the earth.
What?
There are 360 days. You know, their year is not the same as our year. Unless they've got a different planet they're measuring from, it wouldn't be based on the sun's orbit around the earth. Because their 100 years is thousands of years back.
Well, all I can imagine is again there's some other convention. You know, would you like to research this topic? I can do it. I mean, there's all kinds of things to get into, and this is one of them. I can't find this passage in the Bhava the Chocolate comes in. They have no... Yeah, here it is. Here's a general description of the subterranean heavenly planets. Bilasvarga. It's nice there, first of all, because Maya Dhanava fixes it up really well. And, so parks, gardens, sense gratification. Then it says, since there is no sunshine, I'm reading 5.24.11, since there is no sunshine in those subterranean planets, time is not divided into day and night. And consequently, fear produced by time does not exist. Fear is always associated with the passage of time. Prabhupada defines fear as you do not know what will happen next. It comes because you don't know what will happen next. Then it goes on, many great serpents reside there with gems on their hoods, and the effulgence of these gems dissipate the darkness in all directions. Since the residents of these planets drink and bathe in juices and elixirs made from wonderful herbs. The word in Sanskrit for wonderful is divya. They know herbal medicine. They are free from all anxiety and physical disease. They have no experience of gray hair, wrinkles, or invalidity. See, this is why this is swarga. Their bodily lusters do not fade. Their perspiration does not cause a bad smell. And they are not troubled by fatigue or lack of energy or enthusiasm due to old age. This is them. They live very auspiciously. And do not fear death from anything but death's established times. Which is the effulgence of the Sudarshan Chakra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The prophet says in the purport, the members of a demonic civilization endeavor to make their living conditions very comfortable, but they cannot check death. The influence of Sudarshan Chakra will not allow their so-called material happiness to endure. When the Sudarshan Chakra enters those provinces, when the Sudarshan disc enters those provinces, the pregnant wives of the demons, Asura Vadi, all have miscarriages due to fear of its effulgence. So this is like, it's so strange that this is the other place this happened. So that's where this occurs in the 24th chapter. So here also, at the end of every year, this chakra somehow disturbs the daughters of Prajapati, the 360,000 knights personified.
In this then, how often can they conceive? Is there any knowledge?
I only know as much about it as in the text.
Okay.
So now, it's just these are things that you want to know. I'm just giving you these things because one wants to know more about them. And Maharaj Pariksit doesn't ask every possible question that shows up because he only has a short time to live. So he just hits the main point. We will try to fill these in because people will want to know these things as far as they are known about them. That's our research project. We have to look at the other sources of information where you might find it, which are immense. Even the Vedas themselves have some of the information. We'll just speak of the other Puranas and Upa Puranas and so on. So anyway, Lakshmi is leading the worship, and she's doing it along with Sambatsara and his sons and daughters there in Situ Malabarsha. And they're worshipping Kamadev. We also chant that name, Sin Kamadevaya. It's my name, yeah. Who appears as Krishna's son in the purport here, named Arjuna, is Vishnu Tattva. How this is so is explained by Madhvacharya, who quotes from the Brahmanda Purana. Here's a place where one might find out more right here, from the Brahmanda Purana. That's one of the ones high on our list of ones to check out. Samadeshitam Vishnu Pasate. And then Prabhupada writes, although this Kamadeva is Vishnu Tattva, his body is not spiritual but material. Did you know this? Strange fact. Although this Kamadeva is Vishnu Tattva, his body is not spiritual but material. Lord Vishnu, as Prajumna or Kamadeva, accepts the material body, but he still acts spiritually. It does not make any difference whether he accepts a spiritual or a material body. He can act spiritually in any condition of existence. Mayavadi philosophers regard even Lord Krishna's body as material, but their opinions cannot impede the spiritual activity of the Lord. Now, I'll read you a little bit more about this Kamadeva and his body. This is from the 10th canto, 1055.1, where you'll also see this in the 55th chapter of the Krishna book. The history of Prajumna. He had interesting history. Do you remember this history? The history of Prajumna was that he was burned to ashes by Lord Shiva's anger. Kamadeva, yes, he was burned to ashes by Lord Shiva's anger. And so he was reborn as part and parcel of Prajumna from the womb of Rukmini. So when he was reborn, he merged, became Prajumna. A demon named Shambhara, thinking Prajumna his enemy, kidnapped him from the maternity room even before he was 10 days old. Shambhara threw Prajumna in the ocean and returned to the kingdom. I'll get rid of this kid, tossed him in the sea. A powerful fish swallowed Prajumna and was caught by a fisherman in the net. I love this story. They presented this huge fish to Shambhara. And when his cook cut it open, they found a child in his belly. The cooks gave the infant to the maidservant, Mayavati, who was astonished to see him. Then, the person who always forwards the plot, Narada Muni, comes and tells her who this infant was, and who she was, that she, Mayavati, was actually Kamadeva's wife, Rati. Devi. Rati means love. Kama and Rati. Right? And while waiting for her husband to be reborn in a new body, she had taken employment as a cook in the household of Shambhara. So now she takes care of this little baby, like his mother, and then Prajumna grows up and becomes a young man, entrancing all the women with his beauty. So then, Rati Devi came to Prajumna one day and started looking at him in a special way. And he says, "You know, this is not Matri Baba. You're not acting like my mom. You're acting like a kami, my girlfriend, like making me very uncomfortable." And so then Rati told him, "Hey, look, here's the story of your life." So then she tells him that he should kill Shambhara, and to help him, she gave him the mystic mantra known as Mahamaya. So then there was a fight. Prajumna went to Shambhara and challenged him, insulting him. And so then they had a fight where the demon tries his magic spells he had learned from the demons, his black magic spells. But Prajumna fended them off with the Mayamaya mantras that he had gotten, Mahamaya mantras that he had gotten from Mayavati Rati Devi. And he decapitated Shambhara. And Rati Devi appeared in the sky and kissed Prajumna off to Dwarka. When he comes to Dwarka, everybody thought he was Krishna himself. He was a dead ringer for his father. But after a while, they noticed some small differences, and then they sort of gathered around and looked at them. And Rukmini saw Prajumna as his mother. She began to milk sugar flow from her breast. And then she figured out, you remember how one of her sons had been abducted from the maternity room, and actually he was still alive, he'd be this age right now. And so then Krishna came, he understood everything, but he kept his mouth shut, and Narada Muni showed up and told everybody what was going on again. And then the chapter ends with all the ladies, because he looks so much like Krishna, the ladies who were really like his mothers, they all were kept thinking of him like in a conjugal way. And then they said, well, it wasn't so bad because he looked so much like Krishna, it's understandable. Anyway, that's the story. So here, the beginning of this chapter begins. Kamadeva is an expansion of Vasudeva that had previously been burned to ashes by Rudra's anger. Now, to obtain a new body, he merged back into the body of Lord Vasudeva. And then in the purport, in his Krishna Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami cites the following verse from the Gopalakatha Upanishad to prove that Prajumna, who is the son of Krishna and Rukmini, is the same Prajumna who's a member of Lord Krishna's eternal fourfold plenary expansion, that Chaturvyuha. We discussed that Chaturvyuha already. The translation of the texts from the Upanishad is there in Dwarka. The Almighty Lord Krishna, endowed with his full potency, resides in the company of his three plenary expansions, Balaram, Aniruddha, and Prajumna. The Krishna Sandarbha goes on to explain, with reference to the present verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that, quote, the Cupid, whom Rudra burned up with his anger, is a demigod subordinate to Indra. This demigod Cupid is a partial manifestation of the prototype Cupid, Prajumna, who is a plenary expansion of Vasudeva. The demigod Cupid, being unable to attain a new body on his own, entered within the body of Prajumna. Otherwise, Cupid would have had to remain in a perpetual state of disembodiment, a result of Rudra's having incinerated him with his anger. That's the story, the backstory. So also, Ananga, no having no body, is another name for Kamadeva.
It sounds like this Prajumna is a little bit different than the Prajumna of Chaturvyuha, because...
No, he's just saying it's the same.
The other one doesn't contain Cupid in it.
He does.
But he has a spiritual body, doesn't he?
It says here he has a Prabhupada to say that this Prajumna, at least this form of him,
yes,
has a
material
body, which is, you know, from Krishna's point of view, I mean, it's a distinction without a difference, practically speaking. Anyway, that's the story. Okay, now we go back to here. Continuing with this text, And Ketu Malavarsha, Lord Kamadev, moves very graciously. His mild smile is very beautiful, and when he increases the beauty of his face by slightly raising his eyebrows and glancing playfully, he pleases the goddess of fortune. Thus he enjoys his transcendental senses. But you remember from the context that we are really describing a deity form of the Lord. It's very clearly stated that all these forms are deity forms, but here this deity moves very graciously, smiles, raises his eyebrows and glances playfully, and so on. Which deities do if you're the right person worshipping them? Because if a deity is none different from Krishna, and everything Krishna does, deity does. But not for everybody. And then, accompanied during the daytime with the sons of Prajapati, that is the predominating deities of the day, and accompanied at night by his daughters, the deities of the night, Lakshmi Devi worships the Lord during the period known as the Samvatsara, in his most merciful form as Kamadev. Fully absorbed in devotional service, she chants the following mantras. In Sanskrit, she chants this. This Upanishadic mantra appears next. In the verse, Tat Bhagavata Mayamayam Rupam. His form is Mayamayam. And Prabhupada translates this as full of affection for the devotees. And he has something to say about this word and the purport. The word maya with two long A's, maya and then mayam, maya, maya. So when maya is used as a suffix, it usually means made of or composed of the nature of. And then the word maya. The word mayamayam used in this verse should not be understood according to the interpretations of the Mayavadis. Maya means affection as well as illusion. When a mother deals with her child affectionately, she is called mayamayam. In whatever form the Supreme Lord Vishnu appears, he is always affectionate toward his devotees. Thus the word mayamayam is used here to mean very affectionate toward the devotees. Srila Jiva Goswami writes in this regard, so now Prabhupada's quoting the commentators on this word, that mayamayam can also mean kripa prakshuram, deeply merciful. Similarly, Srila Vira Raghava says, another commentator, Maya Pacharanat Niya Santalpena Parivitam Iti Arta Dhyana Pariyajyota Maya Shabdaha. When one is very affectionate, due to an intimate relationship, one is described as Maya Maya. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains mayamayam by dividing it up into the words maya and amayam. In Sanskrit, when you see a long A between two words, two short A's coming together, a long A and a short A coming together, one on either side, two long A's coming together, it all becomes a long A. And so he divides maya and amaya. He explains these words to indicate because a living entity is covered by the disease of illusion, amaya means disease, the Lord is always eager to deliver his devotees from the clutches of maya and cure him of the disease caused by the illusory energy. So this is some of the commentators. Now we come to this mantra. How many people have texts now ahead of them? You all have texts? Because then we can chant this mantra together. Let me see. Okay, let's try it. This goes on. Do you have a text? Om Ham Hrim Hrum Om Namo Bhagavate Rishikeshaya.
Om Ham Hrim Hrum Om Namo Bhagavate Rishikeshaya.
Sarvaguna Visheshar Vilakshitatmane.
Sarvaguna Visheshar Vilakshitatmane.
Akutinam Chittinam Chetasam Visheshanam Charipataye.
Akutinam Chittinam Chetasam Visheshanam Charipataye.
Shodashakalaya Chandomayaya Namayaya Mrita Mayaya. Sarva Mayaya. Then that's what Sarva Mayaya.
Sarva Mayaya.
Sahase Ujase Balaya Kantaya Kamaya.
Sarva Ujase Balaya Kantaya Kamaya.
Namaste Ubayatra Bhuyat.
Namaste Ubayatra Bhuyat.
That really is good, huh? I'm hoping some way for somebody, one of our, you know, bands to put it to music, you know, with big chords. Om Ram Ram Room.
Except they only got a Bill Newmarketers, you can say.
I used to do the rest of it, man, because it really, akutinam chittinam chetasam visheshanam charipataye, you know, sahase ujase balaya kataya kamaya namaste. It's really good. Prabhupada says, from hrim hrum, the seeds of the mantra chanted for a successful result. These are all these bija mantras. And he's addressed here as Rishikesh, the Lord of the senses. In his translation of the Kama Gayatri with Kamadev, Prabhupada translates as the master of the senses. So here the translation. Let me offer my respectful obeisances in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Rishikesh, the controller of all my senses and the origin of everything. All that's in this as the Supreme Master of all bodily, mental, and intellectual activities, he is the only enjoyer of their results. The five sense objects and 11 senses, this is the Shodasha, the 16. Including the mind, when you say 11 senses, you include the mind, are his partial manifestations. He supplies all the necessities of life, which are his energy, and thus none different from him. And he is the cause of everyone's bodily and mental prowess, which is also none different from him. Indeed, he is the husband and provider of all necessities for all living entities. This is the word kantaya. Kanta means the kantaya kamaya, the supreme husband. This becomes the theme of most of the prayers, that he's the husband of everybody. Of all necessities for all living entities, the purpose of all the Vedas is to worship him. Therefore, let us all offer him our respectful obeisances. May he always be favorable toward us in this life and the next. You see, it is Ubayatra Bhuyat, may there be all good fortune. Ubayatra, always. but it means both times. So day and night, because of the days and the nights that are chanted. Or both in Ubayatrik also mean this life and the next. The Prabhupada puts, in the word for word, he gives both of them in the translation, this life and the next. So then Prabhupada's purport, in this verse, the word mayamaya, is further explained in regard to how the Lord expands his mercy in different ways. All the energy that's here is an expansion of the Lord's mercy, maya maya. He is described as the original source of everything, even our bodies, senses, mind, activities, prowess, bodily strength, mentally strength, and determination for securing the necessities of life. And these, the Lord's energies, can be perceived in everything. The taste of water is also Krishna. He's the active principle of everything we need for our maintenance. Then Prabhupada remarks, this verse offering respectful obeisances unto the Lord was composed by Rama, the goddess of fortune, and is full of spiritual power. He particularly says, under the guidance of the spiritual master, everyone should chant this mantra and thus become a complete and perfect devotee of the Lord. One may chant this mantra for complete liberation from material bondage, and after liberation, one may continue to chant while worshipping the Supreme Lord and the Queen of all. That's Uba Yatra Buya. You could chant it now, and you get it in bondage, you could chant the liberation in this life and the next. All mantras, of course, are meant for this life and the next life, as Krishna confirms in the Bhagavad Gita, always chanting my glories and so on. Devotee who both in this life and the next chants the Maha Mantra or any mantra is called Ditya Yukta Upasaka, always united with Krishna in devotion. That's his purport on this verse. A really nice mantra here. Any questions about that one? Want to chant it again? We'll do better with it. Well, here's what I do. We divide it in certain places. Om Ram Rim Bhum Om Namo Bhagavate Rishikeshaya. We'll put up a divider there. Sava Guna Vishesha Latak Vilakshita Mune. We'll divide it there. Akutinam Sitinam Chaitrasam Visheshanam Shadi Patyaye. We'll divide it there. And here's where we run into trouble. Shodasha Kalaya Chando Mayaya. So here's what we should do. It says Chando Mayaya. We'll split that long A out into two A's. So Chando Mayaya and then Anamayaya. And then another short A. Amrita Mayaya, Sara Mayaya. So we got all these Mayayas, right? Remember how this word, so it means this is in the dative case, or in the adjective case. Chando Maya, he's addressed as Chando Maya, Ana Maya, Amrita Maya, Sara Maya. Remember, Prabhupada says in the purport, all of these are different manifestations of his mercy. So Chanda Maya means composed of, made of the Vedic hymns, Anamaya made of Anna, food stuff, of rains, Amrita Maya made of Amrita, Sarva Maya made of everything. So break those up. Sahase, Ojuse, this is all addressed to him, who is Sahaja is. How does he call it? It's one kind of power or strength. The powerful Ojasa is sensory strength, bala, physical strength, and kantaya, to one who is affectionate or a husband, maya, the one who is giving all desires, namaste vayatsa buddha. So can you see how we put that up now? So that series of mayas, you got to take that long A and make it the short A, two short A's. Okay, let's try it. Om Ham Him Hum Om Namo Bhagavate Rishikeshaya.
Om Ham Him Hum Om Namo Bhagavate Rishikeshaya.
Sarvaguna Vishesha Vilakshitatmane.
Sarvaguna Vishesha Vilakshitatmane.
Akutinam Chittinam Chetasam Visheshanam Sharipataye.
Akutinam Chittinam Chetasam Visheshanam Sharipataye.
Shodashakalaya Chandomayaya Annamayaya Amritamayaya Sarvamayaya.
Shodashakalaya Chandomayaya Annamayaya Sarvamayaya.
Sahase ojase balaya kantaya kamaya.
Sahase ojase balaya kantaya kamaya.
Namaste ubhayatra bhuya.
Namaste ubhayatra bhuya.
That's better.
It actually does do the whole verse. I'll play it for you later. Mikey does.
Yeah, I told him to do that, right? That's what he said. I didn't know he ever actually did it.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. I said, "This, you got to set this to music."
Yeah, the chorus he does of the Om Namo Bhagavate Rishikeshaya, that goes a couple times, but then he actually does it in the whole thing.
Nice. Full of spiritual power. You feel that? Feel the power!
Once every year for chanting these prayers,
you know? It's not no meter, it's just prose.
Oh, so is there a particular...
Well, I don't say them right, but there's people who... There is... If you chant the Upanishads, you know, there's a certain accents you use and everything like that, and I do not know how to do that. These Gurukuli boys are all trained up that way. If you really want to find out how to chant it that punk away, go ask Guru Kula Maharaj to read it for you. Yeah, so, but there's not a meter in the sense of disturb or anything like that, because I just break it up this way because when you want to get flashy out of some of these things, people just ignore them. But if you break them up in a certain way, and you can say, but I'm sure the people who know how to do this really make it sound good. So then, now she has this whole series of prayers, mostly focusing on the inadequacy of material husbands as compared to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By dear Lord, she begins, this is text 19, you are certainly the fully independent master of all senses. Swataha here means independent. And again, Rishikeshwaram. Rishika Ishwaram. Therefore, all women who worship you by strictly observing vows, because they wish to acquire a husband. A pati is the word for husband, which in Sanskrit means same word as lord, maintainer, protector, and so on. Pati. Because, it shows up all the place for names of devas as they're called, this or that pati, and so on. Or kings of pati, as husbands pati. Because they wish to acquire a husband to satisfy their senses. are surely under illusion. They do not know that such a husband cannot actually give protection. They are not able to protect them or their children, nor can he protect their wealth and the duration of life, for he himself is dependent on time. Fruit of results in the modes of nature which are all subordinate to you. In other words, he is aswatantra. Swatantra means independent, but he is aswatantra. He is dependent. And here's the list of the things he's dependent on, which I don't think is spelled out in the text. It is not. In the Sanskrit, the prophet says he's dependent on. He usually takes it from a purport where one of the acharyas name what it means. He's dependent. And ultimately dependent on material nature and then dependent upon you, she says, meaning the Lord. In this verse, Lakshmi Devi, Ramana, shows compassion towards women who worship the Lord with the benediction of possessing a good husband. They desire to be happy, they want these things, children, wealth, long duration of life, and everything dear to them. These are the things that are mentioned in the verse. They cannot do this because a so-called husband is dependent on the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the Prophet has many examples of women who have husbands fail to do the thing, to protect them, or maintain them, their wife, children, wealth, and so on. Therefore, the only real husband of all women is Krishna, that he is the only pati. Pati means he is the one who can really maintain. The supreme husband. Because the gopis were liberated souls, they understood that fact. Therefore, they rejected their material husbands and accepted Krishna as their real husbands. Krishna is the real husband, not only of the gopis, but of every living entity. Everyone should understand that Krishna is the real husband of all living entities who are described in Bhagavad Gita as Prakriti, female, not Purusha, male. And he quotes 10:10, Purusham Shastatam Divyam, you are the Purusha. Krishna is the original Purusha, the living entities are all Prakriti. Thus Krishna is the enjoyer and all living entities are meant to be enjoyed by him. Therefore, any woman who seeks a material husband for her protection, or any man who desires to become the husband of a woman, is under illusion. Works both ways. To become a husband means to maintain a wife and children nicely by supplying wealth and security. However, a material husband cannot possibly do this, for he is dependent on his karma. Karma na daivanitena. His circumstances are determined by his past group activities. So then Prabhupada says that, you know, Krishna allows us, because people want to get married, he allows for the so-called husband to possess a wife, and the wife to possess a so-called husband for mutual satisfaction. Actually, however, every living entity is Prakriti or a female, and Krishna is the only husband.
That's
19. Yeah.
That's
19. Because Unis is Purusha and Prakriti. Or all the division between the on the masculine side, the enjoyer, the female side, the enjoyed. Everyone is to be enjoyed by Krishna. he's really the only one in which legitimately the word pati goes to. Everybody else, any other man who's going to be the enjoyer of a woman, is a phony. A pretender and a competitor with God. I've frequently told this story where I was listening to a tape, Prabhupada talking to some gentleman from Indian land who was a Christian, probably from Kerala or someplace like that, because it was clear he had been converted by missionaries who, one of their methods of conversion is to compare the beautiful pure character of Jesus with that of the nasty character of Krishna, who has joys in other men's lives. Standard technique. They should have compared him with Chaitanya. Anyway, so that was the thing. Because he said to this man, said to Prabhupada, how can you worship a God who is an adulterer? And Prabhupada said, he didn't pause a second, didn't skip a beat, he says, Krishna is not an adulterer. You are the adulterer. All women belong to Krishna. That's what he said. And I felt this stab in my heart. And I thought, not just one thing. Get out of all. And that's why I'm in the material world, see. And this guy sees his pious Christian, you know, he's got his wife, and, you know, call him an adulterer.
I don't know how I once used an argument with a man. He came out in a different way. He says, you know, Krishna is dancing with other man's wife. Mm-hmm. No, you are dancing with Krishna's wife.
Mm-hmm. Same point, yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, Krishna is, and everyone else is property. Krishna is Purusha, and we are all property to be enjoyed by Krishna. So then the prayers go on in text 20, and now 20 more or less, as Prabhupada says in the purport, here is the meaning of husband or guardian is clearly explained. He alone who is never afraid, akuta bhaya, again that word, but who on the contrary gives complete shelter to all fearful persons, can actually become a husband and protector. So there's two groups here, akutobaya, one who's akutoba, free from fear, and baya atura, those who suffer from fear. One who can pati, maintain those, that person, he alone is, and who's swayam, self-sufficient, entirely self-sufficient, swayam samantata. Therefore, my Lord, you are the only husband, and no one else can claim this position. If you were not the only husband, you would be afraid of others. Therefore, persons learning in all Vedic literature accept only your Lordship as everyone's master, and they think no one else a better husband or protector than you. Prabhupada, here the meaning of husband or guardian is clearly explained. People want to become a husband, a guardian, a governor, a political leader without actually knowing the meaning of such a superior person. So he says, then take a position or post, and then the Lord desires their removal, and it's all over for them. So then Prabhupada concludes, instead of deceiving themselves and others by pretending to be all-powerful, all political leaders, husbands, guardians should spread the Krishna consciousness movement so everyone can learn how to surrender to Krishna, the supreme husband. So they're intensified with the definition of bhakti. Now he says, she says, my dear Lord, you automatically fulfill all desires of a woman who worships your lotus feet in pure love. However, if a woman worships your lotus feet for a particular purpose, you also quickly fulfill her desires, but in the end she becomes brokenhearted and laments. Therefore, one need not worship your lotus feet for some material benefit. These people who worship the Lord but want some material benefit, these ladies especially, they're called in the Sanskrit Bhagina Yachna. Yachna is a petitioner or a beggar, a pleader for something, and they are bhagna, broken. They become brokenhearted and laments. They worship him, they worship the Lord, but they're apila kama lapata, maintaining all kinds of material desires. You will give them what they want, but it only, in the end, leaves them brokenhearted and suffering. There's an interesting statement in here. We should look at this. Of course, we have taken up the path of pure devotional service, as Prabhupada says. Anya adilasita shun. Pure devotional service means that one should serve the Lord without any tinge of material desire of karma, jnana, yoga perfections, and so on. Not to fulfill some material desire for success. And so then probably the neophyte just worships the Lord strictly according to regular principles given by the spiritual master in this. And the Shastras, in this way, he becomes eventually spontaneously attached to the Lord. The Lord then looks after the comfort and security of his devotee without being asked. This is one thing that it becomes a theme in these verses, and of course, probably to everyone. There's no need to ask. I mean, faith means the idea is I can stop asking for the Lord for everything and just accept that I'll just serve Him and He knows better than I do what I need and I'm not going to worry about it. There just won't be any anxiety at all. And then Prabhupada quotes 9:22, Yoga Shriman Baham Yaham. I give them the yoga and the shema. Yoga means whatever you need. In the Sanskrit dictionary, these are, says in the Rig Veda, these are business terms. Yoga, acquiring what you need. Shema, securely keeping it. The dictionary says, Shemam te is a greeting to Vaishyas. May your property be secure. So it had this very basic material meaning. And the purport to 9:22, Prabhupada talks about yoga as everything you need for advancing in devotional service and shema as protecting you from falling down on a spiritual level. But many times in lectures and other places, and Prabhupada talks about the material necessities of the devotees, that he is also the yoga shema laham. He carries their yoga and shema. Carry means he takes responsibility for that we get whatever we need and whatever we have is protected by the Lord. Therefore, why should one bother the Lord for something material? In other words, it's already taken care of. A lot of times, the reason we can't worship the Lord, ananyas chintayanto mam, in other words, meditating on the Lord without the mind going anywhere else, is we're preoccupied with yoga and kshema. Our basic necessities of life, we worry about it. What will happen to me in the future? How will I get this? If I don't do this, what will happen then? And, you know, so Krishna is saying, you can just think of me without deviation because I'll take care of this. Don't worry about it. We have to believe him on this matter. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti says, people should understand this because Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that even if a devotee wishes the Lord to fulfill a particular desire, the devotee should not be considered a sakama bhakta, a devotee with some motive. So, in other words, this is a devotee who has, let's say he's accepted the path of pure devotional service. This is what I want. But at the same time, I have some material desires that are in my heart. And I have them, and when I pray to the Lord, I can't help but hoping that he'll fulfill them. Yeah. Still, then quoting Bhagavad Gita 7:16, Chaturvidha Bhajate Mam, the Artha and Artha Arti, the ones who are suffering or in need of finances, who approach the Supreme Lord for relief of misery or for some money, are not Sakama Bhaktas, although they appear to be. Being neophyte devotees, they are simply ignorant. So that may, we shouldn't be so quickly that in young, new devotees that have those material desires there. But if they're taking the path properly, then later in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Udara Sarva Evaiti, they're all magnanimous. Although in the beginning a devotee may harvest some desire, in due course of time it will vanish. So my understanding of this Anya Adilasi, the Shunyam Jnana Karmadi Anavritaham, it really means that we are, accept the path of pure devotional service doesn't mean that we're pure. We're just accepting the path of pure devotional service, and that eventually we come to want to see that all our desires go away. Even though the desires may be there, but we should come to that point. But then the purport goes on, even if one wants something material, he should pray to no one but the Lord to fulfill his desires. If you can give it up and you have to ask for it, you should still ask the Lord, because that's what Bhagavatam says. If you go to a demigod, he says you are nashtabuddhi, you're bereft of intelligence. And then he quoting Vittagyana, Kamastaistas Vittagyana, those who go. And of course, Krishna says in the Bhagavatam, Sarvakama, Mokshakama, Akama, Sarvakama, Va, Mokshakama, Udari, Viti, Vaina, Bhakti, Ubihani, Azeta, Bhavashanka. Whether you have all desires or no desires, or desire liberation, you should, in any case, worship the Lord. Lakshmi Devi advises all devotees who approach the Lord with material desires that, according to her practical experience, the Lord is accommodating, and there's no need to ask him for anything material. Since the Supreme Personality of Godhead is sitting in everyone's heart, he knows everyone's thoughts, and in due course of time he will fulfill all desires. Therefore, let us completely depend on the service of the Lord without bothering Him with our material requests. And nice and before Him. So Lakshmi Devi goes on, O Supreme, Unconquerable Lord, when they become absorbed in thoughts of material enjoyment, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, as well as other demigods and demons, undergo severe penances and austerities to receive my benedictions. So now she's talking about herself. She's the Lakshmi Devi, right? She's the one you see there. She's got coins coming out of the palms of her hands. But I do not favor anyone, however great he may be, unless he's always engaged in the service of your lotus feet, because I always keep you within my heart. I cannot favor anyone but a devotee. There's this interesting word in this verse, by the way. So to attain my mercy, Mat Praptaye, Aja and Isha, Brahma and Shiva, Sura, the Suras and Asuras, Adayaha, they are all Tapyante Ugram Tapaha. They undergo Ugra Tapaha, severe austerities. And what are they? Aindriye Diya, whose minds are absorbed in thoughts of superior sense gratification. I looked this word up in the dictionary, Aindriya, because it means having to do with the senses. One whose di is mentality. The word was, this compound was in the dictionary, Aindriya di. They're having the mentality of being completely absorbed in the senses. And then it cited this very verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam in Mona Williams. I was so happy to see that. For this word, for this definition of this word, Aindriya di.
I have a question. This is kind of logic which would make me think that anybody who's rich or trying to get rich and getting rich is somehow succeeding. That person, someone must be a devotee also because Lakshmi is favoring me.
Well, we'll get to that. Okay? This comes up.
Okay.
So those people, I do not favor anyone. But here now, here's what happens. So what happens when others are favored by Lakshmi and they're not devotees? Are they secret devotees? Prabhupada answers this question, the very question you asked. In this verse, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi, clearly states that she does not bestow her favor on any materialistic person. Whoa, that's counterfactual. No, although sometimes a materialist becomes very opulent in the eyes of another materialist, such opulence is bestowed upon him by the goddess Durga Devi, a material expansion of the goddess of fortune, not by Lakshmi Devi herself. This is very profound. And Prabhupada brings it to this thing. Those who desire material wealth worship Durga Devi with the following mantra. Dhanam dehi, rupam dehi, rupapati, bhagyam dehi, you know, dehi, 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 give me, give me, give me. Give me wealth, give me beauty, give me a nice, beautiful wife. Dehi, dehi, dehi. This is their mantra. By pleasing Goddess Durga, one can obtain such benefits, but since they are temporary, the result only is Maya Sukha. Illusory happiness. Maya Sukhaya, Prahlad says they only get Maya Sukhaya. Illusory happiness, or we could say the illusion of happiness. he quotes this from on the other hand, devotees like Prahlad and Dhruva Maharaj achieved extraordinary material opulences, but such opulence were not Maya Sukha. When a devotee acquires unparalleled opulences, they are the direct gifts of the goddess of fortune who resides in the heart of Narayana. That's the difference. So why are they not real? We'll get into this. Then Prabhupada says, Antavattulam tu palam te shante bhavanjalpa medasam, men of meager intelligence desire temporary happiness. And then Prabhupada has this comment. We have actually seen that one of the disciples of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted to enjoy the property of his spiritual master, and the spiritual master, being merciful toward him, gave him the temporary property, but not the power to preach the cult of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all over the world. This, I'll say the name. This is Van Maharaj. He's talking about the story Prabhupada tells in various conversations, which are taped, and you can find them. Sometimes I wonder, Prabhupada, I think he's talking to some people in a small room, and there's a tape going, and then it ends up, you know. But when Van Maharaj went to, and another sannyasi went to London to preach, from Maharaj, before Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati began his career as a spiritual leader, he was a secretary for one of the Maharajas of one of the princely states. I don't remember which one it is now anymore. Somebody may know. So when these were like little states, but these fellows were vastly rich. They had little rooms, and you know, they open it up and the diamonds come flowing out and so on. They just had huge amounts of money. And during the Raj, the British Raj, these people kept their own little states and everything, and they remained, you know, kept in that position as a policy. Tripura was the Maharaj of Tripura. So when he sent these sannyasis to London, he approached the Maharaj of Tripura for a donation to build a temple in London, and he got a huge amount of money from him, which was given to Van Maharaj to build a temple in London, transferred to him. He came back, no temple, no money. And Prabhupada says that Srila Prabhupada, even Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, refused to see him when he came back. And afterwards referred to him as Banasura. Now when Van Maharaj came back, you know, the whole Gaudiya Math made it a state occasion, because they were in intense competition with the Ramakrishna mission. And the big propaganda they're making about Swami Vivekananda, you know, conquering the world, kind of, in 1893, when he showed up at the World Parliament of Religions in Chicago. So they really wanted. So I actually saw a booklet that was put out by Van Maharaj showing him a record of his triumphal preaching tour. Because what he did is he went everywhere and he tried to meet leaders and royalty and had his picture taken with them. And he always had a turban, just like Swami Vivekananda. He always had a turban. And so you see all these pictures, and you know, he went here and he gave a lecture in Albert Hall or someplace, and you know, everybody was wowed, and he went here. And then you see pictures of him with Lord this and Lady this. And then there's a really fabulous one. He went to Berlin and gave a lecture in Berlin. There's a picture of him with Himmler, Goebbels, all the official people who were really interested in and the place where the swastika came from, and so on. So the Gaudiya Math actually turned out and made a big deal of, you know, what a triumphant success he was. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was just. So this is what this refers to. That's the secret. This remark here. So with that money, across from the Krishna Balaram, where the Krishna Balaram is now, Pan Maharaj purchased a big piece of property and made the Institute for Oriental Studies, is what it was called. And there it was. He had how he wanted. He was there in Vrindavan, and he had. I know this scholar named Klaus Fostermeyer, who came to Vrindavan in the 50s. He met Prabhupada before he was called Prabhupada or anything. He was just in Vrindavan writing. It must have been like the mid 50s. Early 60s, because he probably gave him one of his books. But Fostermeyer was teaching at Ban Maharaj's Institute for Oriental Study. At that time, Fostermeyer was a Catholic priest. He wrote a book called In the Paradise of Krishna. So he was, Ban Maharaj wanted to have people from all the different religions, you know. And so he used to joke to Klaus Fostermeyer that this institute, you have the chair of St. Peter. Because he was representing the Catholic Church. So anyway, that's what the money got used for, was purchasing that. When we first started, Prabhupada started building Krishna Balaram Mandir, and we first started coming when the temple was under construction, we wandered through there, and it was pretty much deserted. You know, all the streets were named, you know, after the different sampradayas, acharyas, and there was a little statue of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But it seemed to have fallen in hard times. And eventually, Ban Maharaj, affiliated with the University of Agra, who finally took it over. Now it's like they just teach, you know, computers and stuff there, and all those things like that. Anyway, that's the story. That's what he's referring to. Prabhupada says, that special mercy of the power to preach is given to a devotee who does not want anything material from his spiritual master, but wants only to serve him. And then he mentions the story of Ravana. Ravana tried to abduct the goddess of fortune from the custody of Lord Ramachandra, but he could not possibly do so. The Sita Devi he forcefully took with him was not the original Sita, but an expansion of Maya or Durga Devi. As a result, instead of winning the favor of the real goddess of fortune, Ravana and his whole family were vanquished by the power of Durga Devi. So this idea is actually quite profound. In other words, when the ungodly, when they want Lakshmi, why do they want Lakshmi? Because they want to be the enjoyer of the goddess of fortune. In other words, they want to be God. But he didn't get Sita, he got Maya Sita. So they don't get the goddess of fortune, but they get this imitation, Durga. So what they get, it looks like wealth, it looks like the favors, but it all turns to dust. It's actually very profound what happens. What's the difference? When is this like money? When is it Lakshmi and when is it Durga? When it's used in Krishna's service, it's Lakshmi. When it's used for sense gratification, it's Maya. See? So Same thing. But anyway, the story is very profound in this sense also. Sigmund Freud claimed to discover in his patients, middle class Viennese bourgeoisie of the late 19th century and early 20th century, a desire on the part of men to enjoy their mothers and kill their fathers, right? He called it the Oedipus complex, after King Oedipus, right? He said this was all in there. When Prabhupada heard this, of course, Sigmund Freud said, this is in everybody. Prabhupada said, I never wanted to do that. Which would simply be dismissed as naive by most Western people who believe Freud. Anyway, he claimed to have found it, and maybe it's true, because I think there's a deep level that it is true of every materialist, because who is our father originally? It's Krishna, or say Ramchandra. And who is the mother? Lakshmi. So what does a demon want to do? He wants to kill God and enjoy Lakshmi. That's Ravana, right? To kill Ramachandra and enjoy Sita. So the original Oedipal complex is in relationship to God. And those religions where they have a masculine God but no feminine, why is it missing? Because they're busy enjoying her. The tendency is there anyway. It's not as clear. But what people really want to do when they enjoy this world, it really is a God project. Just the idea, I am the enjoyer and I am the controller. That's why if you analyze it, just the act of sense gratification is the act of atheism. The sense gratification is the act of atheism. When there's sense gratification, where is God? Gone. There's me in the sense of, or maybe he's off in the background saying have a good time, but he's not involved in the transaction, right? Everything belongs to Krishna, so when I take something that belongs to Krishna and try to enjoy it myself, I'm alienating Krishna's property. Krishna's property is actually Lakshmi. All wealth is the goddess of fortune. Prabhupada explained this. He told this story, actually. He initiated a devotee in Oregon with one of the names of Hanuman. And he explained that the demons are like Ravana. They've taken Sita to enjoy it. But a devotee, he tries to take Sita away from Ravana and again place her at the side of Ramachandra. That's what Hanuman does. And so he suggests this devotee, you can go to people and you say, please, give your love to Krishna. If you do not, you will be killed. But you see, the price one pays for to have sense gratification, you have to be a false self. You can't be the real self. That means you have to identify with the body. You identify with the body, you die. Because the Prabhupada once said, death is an illusion we've imposed upon ourselves due to our desire to enjoy in this world. Well, it's a fact. Sense gratification is the cause of death. Because it creates the false ego. That's why the false ego is there, is because of acts of sense gratification. That's why you can say, I'm not my body, and not have any realization. Because the identification of the body, it is forged by acts of sense gratification. That's why Dehi Sansparsha Jaboga Dukkha Yonayavate, those pleasures which arise from the contact between our senses and the objects are in fact the cause of all suffering. Just the opposite of what you think. Right? Because every time there's sense gratification, we identify more with the body. And actually, if you do a phenomenological analysis of sense gratification, it's very interesting. If you should find yourself enjoying some sense gratification, look at what happens. You bring your senses into contact with the object, and there's pleasure. I don't think yet that's sense gratification, because you could have the attitude towards the pleasure that you could have toward any sensation, just something is happening in the body. You're not a favorable or unfavorable. But when there's sense gratification and there's pleasure, then there's a kind of a mental motion to seize upon this sense gratification and have the attitude, the abhiman, the sense that now I'm enjoying. That's so important to people. Now I'm enjoying. You notice that when people enjoy, they like to be really loud and make a lot of noise. Everybody else can see. Anyway, I'm enjoying. So you, and when you say that, or when you don't say it, but when you feel, now I'm really having, now I'm enjoying, and then you puff up. You think you're more real, you're more substantial, you're more alive, you're more vital. And of course, then you think whatever you're enjoying is mine. Because you're trying to be the enjoyer. And really what's going on is you think you've become God, the enjoyer and the controller of the world. And it starts to activate atheism. And you puff up, and you identify deeper and deeper with the material body. That's what happens. And it's all theft. We're all taking something that belongs to Krishna and therefore is to be enjoyed by Krishna and trying to put ourselves in his place. That's what's happening. And that's why we get Maya. We get Maya Sita. And you tell yourself you're enjoying, you're having a good time, but in the end, you find out it's nothing substantial. It's not real because it's temporary. You don't get to be God enjoying with the goddess of fortune in the spiritual world. You're down here, you know. You're trying to be the enjoyer at the age of 65, calling up some escort service.
Like we're trying in the temple to remove mala from the altar and put some bam there and it doesn't work.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you can't do it. Because I think Prabhupada is very clear about this, you know, that everyone in the material world is a competitor with God. And we have this going on. We come to this world and there's desire and hate, there's dualities. And somewhere, Prabhupada says, the original desire is, why can't I be God? And the original hate is, why should Krishna be God? And that's what we have to get over. We have to say, yes, you, Krishna, you are God, you're the enjoyer, all women belong to you, everything belongs to you, I'm your servant, and I'm happy with it. I have no objection. I'm really into it, actually. Because ultimately, the false ego means that we are right now enthusiastic about our own happiness. We are centered around ourselves. We're concerned about our own well-being. That's like our obsession or our preoccupation. We have to become obsessed in the same way with Krishna's happiness and his well-being. Then actually we'll be happy. That's the last of the prayers, I think. One more, she says. The final one. It's the verse 23. It ends with itti because that closes off the whole series. She says, your lotus palm is the source of all benediction. Therefore, your pure devotees worship it. And you very mercifully place your hand on their heads. I wish that you may also place your hand on my head. For, although you already bear my insignia of golden streaks on your chest, I regard this honor merely as a kind of false prestige for me. You show your real mercy to your devotees, not to me. In other words, she counts herself as his wife. Devotees. You are the supreme absolute controller, and no one can understand your motives. This is sometimes a theme. Prabhupada has a purport. The goddess of fortune is sometimes called Tapasvini because she's performing austerities. She leaves her position to perform the austerities to take a position of a gopi, become a servant of the gopis in Vrindavan, because Krishna has more favor for them than for her. And Prabhupada quotes, we're running out of time, but he has the text from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the conversation with Venkata Bhatta about how Lakshmi leaves the Narayan to try to get enter into the Rasa dance. Is that unchaste? No, because actually they're the same person, Narayan and Krishna. She just wants to appreciate that association that the gopis have. So therefore, one has to ultimately take shelter of the residents of Vrindavan, Brajbhumi, in order to achieve that position, which she tries to do. And therefore, her appreciation for the devotees, worships his Kara Ambuja, your lotus hat. Ambuja, born of water. Lotus. Yeah. Okay, those are her prayers. Any questions? Or? Nice, very nice prayers. Prabhupada gave some really, really fine purports here. Next, tomorrow. Is it tomorrow? Yes. Tomorrow. It's Sunday. I have to get a Bhagavatam class tomorrow. I thought it was always this. Anyway, they asked me to get class tomorrow. So next we go north. Ramyaka, Hiranmaya, and Uttari Kuru Varsha. You will notice as we go north that all three, the Lord's former Lord, has to do with water. I don't know why that is. Matsya Kurma and Varaha, who is called Mahiranyaksha, an amphibious beast. So they all have the pastimes in the water. I'm thinking that some key to this. Either they're in the directions or something, you know.
Krishna is fine in Bhagavan, and he has pastimes in the water, which is the most attractive. So the other their pastimes in the water, but which are not as attractive as Krishna.
Well, actually, you know, there's an emphasis here how attractive all these forms are. by the way. Yes?
Come there on the spiritual, but the body is material. It is too soft, but the body is material.
So that's what he says. Can you say Krishna can't do it? In one sense, by definition, anybody he has is, it depends on what you mean by spiritual body, you know, but generally a spiritual body is described as, it's made of concentrated Brahman. There are no pipes and pumps and tubes and all these things in it, you know.
But
he is Vishnu Tattva, but still he has a body that, as this is material, but it's as good as, there's no difference between this material body. In other words, it doesn't, even though it's a material body, it doesn't have any of the features and shortcomings that we associate with a material body. You can just look at this purport again. Lord Vishnu, as Prajuna or Kamadeva, accepts a material body, but he still acts spiritually. It does not make any difference whether he accepts a spiritual or a material body. He can act spiritually in any condition of existence. That's what it says. So generally, we are very careful to maintain that Krishna's body is entirely made of Brahman. But when you look at it from Krishna's point of view, matter is just another form of spirit. Spirit means that which is in connection with Krishna. If this becomes Krishna's body, it becomes spiritual.
Nothing is material.
Yeah, not really material, but here it has some attributes or features that make it like a material body. I don't really know what they are. But it's sabhishesha, you know, our philosophy is sabhishesha, so they're varieties. So even though everything is ultimately spirit, there's different kinds of spirit. So the human body is of that kind of spirit that we call material. For us, there's a difference. For Krishna, the difference isn't the same. That's all I can say about that. 5:18:15. You can go ask around. See what different people say. It says on this matter, in the purport to 10:55:1, they give a quotation from Jiva Goswami, and the Krishna Sandarbha. To understand this better, you might want to go to this part, Anucheda 87, in the Krishna Sandarbha, and study it a little carefully and ask some people about this. Is there, it's also described in detail.
What is the plan for the future classes? We'll finish the prayers?
Yeah, we'll finish the prayers. I hope to get through 19 and 20. I'm giving, 20 you don't have an outline for yet. I'm still in the process of working it out.
And then we're going to talk about 19 and 20.
Well, we'll see how much, you know, we can whip through. I 20 doesn't take so much time. But then if we have some time, I'm not quite sure what to do with it. You know, we could go up to the other things, but then you get bogged down in all kinds of technicalities, or we could look at the subterranean heavenly planets. If we have some time. Here, the other prayers maybe go faster, except, you know, when we get to Ramchandra again, we have a lot of stuff that's pretty relevant to us. Actually, they're all nice. The point is you just gotta think of, you know, here, of all the activities that are going on in these marshes, we hear a little bit about other things in Ilavrita Varsha from other places. People going there to the Maniparvata and the Mandara Mountain. But basically, the activity the Bhagavatam chooses to talk about is the devotion of everybody to the deity of Krishna. That's what it really points to, is like the most important thing or the main thing that's going on there. This is also the feature of the Ring Islands, although there they're all worshipping various devatas, but they worship it as a representative of Krishna, or at least of Narayana. So that's what's being described everywhere, is the worship in Jambudvip. You don't really get to anything really secular until you get down to the
This is some question. Although the Lord is worshipped in a deity form in the other varshas, is it only Lord Varsha that actually comes to perform some pastime?
It generally that's the fact that he comes in Bhar Varsha. I don't think only. I have to look and see, because some of the places aren't identified, but Bhar Varsha is really the place. Even the demigods, when they want to make spiritual advances, is where they come. So Bhar Varsha is a crucial place of the universe, because that's the place that the jivas really get out of the cycle of repeated birth and death.
Is it situated in the middle of the junction where you choose?
Yeah, it's the place where you choose. The subterranean heavenly planets, they don't usually get out there. Even though we have, you know, down in the subterranean heavenly planets, there's some devotees. There's Prahlad and there's Bali, because they belong to the Daitya dynasty. And the Lord, I mean, sometimes he appears to the devatas in different places and so on. But usually they're short, but actually real avatars that descend and do long pastimes. So far as I can remember, they're in Bhar Varsha. But I haven't thought of this. You know, I never thought of that question. Did it really come into the other Varsha? Yeah?
I was joking with that. That's your best pastime of Bhar Varsha, the wooden bush.
So how do the living entities in the subterranean heavenly planets get out? Because in that section you were reading, there's purport talk where saying that they have to take another birth because of karma. So do they take rebirth again in the subterranean heavenly planets? Or like in the heavenly planets, Vamasarga, or, you know, they're just burning off their
credits.
And they have to be reborn. So what happens in the subterranean heavenly planets?
Let me think about it. I mean, they're the daichas, and they're spending much time there. You know, occasionally they get killed by Krishna, and that saves them. And they have the influence of people like Prahlad. Maybe that does something for them. Also Lord Shiva is there on one of the planets that's also described, but it doesn't seem like he's doing much toward anybody's elevation down there. They mostly get gold. Well, I'm trying. I'll think about this.
Right, this doesn't seem consistent with our philosophy that they will just be stuck there.
Well, not forever. Somehow or other, they you know, I'm just saying, stuck there means always a very long time, not permanent. As far as our understanding is, no soul left behind, that eventually everyone goes back to Godhead. But sometimes it's a very different. You know, some people take that statement of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, about the demons, I put them into lower and lower conditions of life and they stay there. Some acharyas tend to take that as, like people from the Madhva Sampradaya, they tend to read that like, that's right, they never come out.
When Jeff Vekamani was giving classes, my husband was saying, he was really stressing it, really, that those who are Mayavadi are really demoniac, you really go down. I mean,
and Vishwanand stresses this, but Jeff Vekamani was speaking from both commentaries of Vishwanand and Bhavati, and he explained that by pushing them down, that Krishna's real mercy. You know, they sink lower and lower and then into animal species, because when they remain in the human species, they're just the offenders.
Mm-hmm.
And it's worse for them, so it's better for them to go low and, you know, don't have loose free will, rather than have free will and misuse it. And then, because when they go low, then they start going up again. But if they're in human form of life, mm-hmm. and they are offensive to the devotees, the demigods, they just go lower and lower and lower.
I think he was referring to the atheists, right? Specifically to the atheists.
The yeah, Krishna is putting words in Krishna's mouth, saying, Arjuna is asking, not Krishna, can't be so merciful, you don't do this to them. And Krishna is saying, no, I'm not pushing them. Yes, I do, life after life.
Mm-hmm.
But the other one has to be very
merciful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good, I believe.
It's gone late now. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Bhagavatam ki
jai. If anyone wants to hear the hard rock version of this right now,
I am praying this version.